I'm Larry Brader, and I want to talk about continuous delivery, which really I'm hiding the fact I'm going to talk about ALM, which at this time you had lunch, you're a little full, you're a little tired. If I just said ALM, I'd probably put half of you asleep. So continuous delivery is actually, an ALM is actually a very, to me, a very interesting and fascinating thing over, especially what's happened over with Visual Studio 2012. So let's start off with, you've all seen this, you've all experienced this cartoon. You know, this is a classical way to test, you know. Hit a button, and then something goes wrong, and you go, yeah. Well, let me tell you, when I was first graduated, I ended up working on military aircraft for about 15 years. And I moved from northern Michigan to southern California, and I was working on the B-1. And my boss, and I was actually doing fault tolerance and stuff like that. My boss was working 80 hours a week, but he had to go in the plane and fly with the test pilot. And I was thinking, I'm in Southern California. I want to go to the beaches on the weekend. Are you crazy? And he said, and he explained to me that when the plane, if the plane crashed, I'm up next. So I got a little bit more focused on my work. You know, and if you've ever been and worked with test pilots, and I actually got sent to B-1, and I actually got sent to B-2. I did the B-2 for about 8 years. So I got real familiar with fault tolerance systems and you know, high degree of testing, and it was expensive. And you know, we had a lot of specialized stuff. It was very waterfall, as you can imagine. But things have changed, and we didn't have continuous delivery. We had to build the code and ship it. So one of the things is, what do I mean by continuous delivery? We're familiar with continuous integration. We're going to integrate our code together. We've got a bunch of developers. We're going to pull the code together. We're going to run those unit tests and make sure our... We do write unit tests in here, right? I want to see a show of hands. Okay, good. I had someone tell me that they forgot to do unit testing, and I remember who you are. So we're familiar with continuous integration. The next level is, we're getting to a world where we have to ship all the time. We are always going to be off on the web. Our services, our service licensing agreement is forcing us to take a re-examine how we go through the cycle of shipping. Continuous delivery, we're going to run end-to-end testing, do automated deployment. We're going to do this in some staging test environment. So I know some people quibble about different definitions. We can pick that up after. But that's basically what we're going to talk about here. But we're going to start with ALM. So how many people have a mature ALM solution here? I can kind of see. When I mean mature, that's well thought out. Okay, only a couple hands. That's kind of scary, guys. How well is you integrated your ALM with your workflow? Oh, one or two, okay. How much pain do you experience? I want to see pain. So if you don't have a good ALM, there's pain there in terms of shipping. Well, things have changed on a lot of this stuff when you walk into ALM today. And the reason there's a lot of pain... Ooh. Let's see. Then go to the next slide. Oh, this is good. Oh, talk about test. So did we break it already? I did? That's kind of interesting stuff. Oh, there we go. What? No, it says resume. Here, I need you to be a code monkey.
So this is what we're trying to get to?
Yeah.
And what did that do?
Well, he does that. Let's just pick it up. So why has ALM been such a pain in the butt? And that's because over the years, things have switched over. You know, you just go back 5 to 7 years with dealing with your ALM, and it was very silo. It was not agile. It didn't work with the developer. It was a lot more, you know, the developers are building code, you're used to your repository, but the, all the ways to test it, all the ways, all the repositories, all the testing equipment changed over time. And it was very, very waterfall. You know, and when I was working in the military, it was a very waterfall in the whole thing. And then, so you had kind of the traditional, which is we're going to build the eye, we're going to build the ear, and then we got the leg, and we're going to get all these different parts, and then we're going to integrate those parts together. Agile, well, the developers were saying, this is really too slow. And so the Agile way came out here. We're going to build in an iterative process, test, you know, build a little bit, test a little, build a little bit, test a little bit. And that was really kind of out of sync with the ALM approach. And it's, and so over the last couple years, especially with Visual Studio and TFS, this has changed. The tools had to change to work with this more agile development cycle, which is a very healthy thing. I mean, I used to spend $100,000 for just some test equipment to test stuff, which is insane in some ways. And how in the heck are you going to do that and work with agile when you got to go off and build build all these boxes up? So there was a very disconnect between the different systems. And I watched 2008, TFS 2010, and finally in TFS 2012, we've hit some really major milestones going forward. And in a lot of ways, this book I got to blame on Christopher, because we used to debate this a lot. And I said, damn it, you know, we got TFS, we should use it. And he says, ah, let's go back to Team City. I'm going, my God, I'm at Microsoft, we got to use TFS. And part of the learnings I had on this was it was very hard when I talked to a lot of customers how to get your ALM up and running. I mean, it took, when I took out several different testers, and the ALM side falls to the testers and who builds out the infrastructure, and the devs doesn't really see it too much. And if it takes you 3 weeks to build out an infrastructure and you don't even understand what all those moving parts mean, you aren't going to invest that time or effort into the whole thing. So today, we have finally got down, and I have to say, Sam Guggenheimer and others have really, really done a fantastic job understanding what continuous delivery and what the problem space was. You know, we got the product backlog coming from customers or from feedback, and we have our sprints, and we build the code. We got continuous integration going inside that cycle. And then we drop it off into ops, and ops is going to, we're going to be monitoring it, and we got to get a cycle. We got to get a rhythm here. We all want the rhythm, you know, because we don't know, you don't know what changes are going to come. We don't know what, there might be errors, it might be feedback. What happens, a new virus came out, someone hacked. So you got to turn around and be ready today to do, and then when it's just not jumping and dropping the code, you got to have it tested and make sure that quality is up there. And one of the reasons that's been pushing it is the SLA is much more important, and now it's part of your business model. And if you haven't felt the SLA, you're going to start feeling it more and more as time goes on the whole thing. But how do we really talk about this? You know, and we wrote this book, that's cool, but how do you tell the story? So I broke this book up, and actually I have to say Alan Wills and Howie had a great idea, and we broke it into kind of a three perspective story. We had Contesso and Fabricam combine, merge their company. Contesso did everything traditionally, where Fabricam did everything the new way. And how do you show this comparison? Because if you go to a vice president of engineering and say, I want to revamp my ALM, they're going to say, God, you're going to spend $1 million? Are you crazy? We got workflows, we got all this other stuff invested in ALM, and it works. Why in the hell do you want to change your ALM? So how do you, you know, and I ran my company and I did contracts. Really at that level, at the business level, they only care about two concepts, money and pain. You know, you got to reduce the money and you got to reduce the pain. And if you can't deal with that at that level, you have to go to the business level. So we made a cartoon story to highlight all this throughout the book. We figured the executives will only read the cartoon. The rest of the book is really aimed at engineers. So enjoy the story on that. But it tells a story, but it tries to bring up the pain points and the differences. And here's the scary slide. I remember when I had this up in my office, I had developers walk in here. And they said, holy cow, this is an ALM solution? How many boxes do we have in there? You know, we got SharePoint. Oh, God, that scares them. You know, well, I understand TFS. We need a source repository, right? And I like my Visual Studio. What's the rest of this stuff? You know, I don't really want to know. And, you know, what's test? Okay, build service. We need a build service. We know that. But then when the heck is it, you know, we start dealing with this SCVMM. Well, that's a Service Center Virtual Memory Manager. How many people are familiar with SCVMM? I see some. Even more of a question, how many people deal with VMs in your job daily? That's healthy. Do you want to do more with the VMs? Okay. Well, we're going to get into how the VMs are actually kick butt in terms of how it can help your testing and also your development cycle. Because test and dev have to throw the ball between each other. But this is a full built-out system. Now, what's fascinating about this whole ALM, I have built this whole system out on just as VMs for a one or two person shop. You know, people say, oh, it's too big, you know. And that's not true. That's not true nowadays. What it is, what you're really having is that this thing can scale up to, I've seen it scale up to 5,000 to 7,000 people, and it scale down to two or three man shop. The thing, each one of those components, we're going to walk through each one of them and explain how they interrelate. I could drill down, and before I started this, it would take about 2 or 3 weeks to set this up. I can set this whole thing up now in probably a day and a half. But I understand why I need to set it up, and that's probably the more critical question, is what are the parts, and why do you need them set up? Going in here. So this is a normal adoption I found that occurred when we went into it. People start with the Visual Studio. We are very familiar with that, TFS, or some type of source repository. We got the build service, task management. Task management was coming into the picture. Then you got your portal project so you can coordinate over on the web and other stuff. But then you had these weird birds coming in here. You got this Microsoft Test Manager. How many people play with the Microsoft Test Manager? I got one, two, maybe three, four people. Okay. And that is really one of the heart of the whole new ALM system. It is one of the most fantastic piece of technology I've seen in a long time. It automates a lot of this paperweight that I used to deal with. And we'll get deeper into it. And what it does is coordinate something called the test plan. And what I used to do with test plans, I'll say in an aircraft, there was an old rule, the plane wouldn't fly until the test plan equaled the weight of the plane. And then we had physical, I mean, literally, we had to write it all out on paper, and we had files, and we had a wall filled up with these test plans. And we would have to manually go through these. And even when I did some biomedical work, same thing. Because of regulation and regulatory control, banking industry, they wanted paper. But how do you start coordinating all this stuff? Well, you need a lab environment, and then you need to start, and then how do we start getting this continuous delivery? You need to build it, you need to deploy it, and you need to test it in a staging server. That's a lot of stuff. And how well do you know it really is working and pulling together? This has been the adoption cycle I've been watching people going in here in terms of learning and how to interact with the systems. So what are we doing to achieve continuous delivery? You do manual testing. We all do that now. Your customer will do manual testing if you don't. They might not be your customer for long, but they'll do your manual testing. Then you got your unit testing. Then you got the next level up, integration and UI testing. How many people are familiar with coded UI here? Excellent, excellent. That is, to me, one of the things I love about the .NET platform or any platform that goes into it, and I can drill into that subject. But then you got to build the system, and everybody, that's usually continuous integration. But then you got to deploy the system. And deployment changes because it's not working on your box anymore. You want to deploy it out in the wild and see how the thing really goes. Then you want to test that deployment, and then you want to see the reports of that. So this are all important aspects to get that delivery in a constant and a healthy fashion. Oh, okay, I left this one in here. And because when I say testing and people say, oh, it's unit testing. One gentleman was bringing up there's far, far more than that. You know, you got scalability testing, you got functionality, acceptance, stress, security. I hope you do security. So these are your quality gates or whatever you call them. And then there's, you know, you can have regulations or of different types of testing going in there. And localization, globalization. And this is all different aspects your product has to go through nowadays. And my gosh, if you had everything as a silo, this is how sometimes you have a 2-year lead to get stuff out. Doesn't work that way. You can't live that way anymore. You have to think, continue. You have to get those sprints. You want to ship it into your test environment, and you want to run this stuff. Now, some of the stuff you have to run out of band, like performance testing, stress testing, you might have to sit and pull aside, but it should be working as a cycle. And you should know when to do each one of these. But then the question comes down to, how do you organize all the thing? You know, so these are a lot of moving parts. And so this is a kind of a skeleton diagram I brought up here to start talking about these parts. So we got our normal TFS repository. That's cool. We got our source code. Yeah, that's all familiar to everybody. Oh, now we're going to integrate the user stories. Well, this is great. This is the same with the Agile. And we got the tasks that we're going to get out of the unit story. But we got this bastard child here, the test case. So when I first came at Microsoft, I remember walking into a room, and it was early 2000, and you know they were all bragging to me about Agile, and they had, and the funny thing is I wasn't allowed to go to the Agile meeting. Why does a tester need to go to the Agile meeting? Well, when am I going to test? And then they started complaining that I'm 2 weeks behind them. Well, you didn't invite me to the meeting. I don't know what you're doing. And you know, so, and they're, you know, so it's not just, you know, when you're, how many people include their testers? Actually, good question. How many people include the testers in the Agile meeting? Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. And so do your testers, I'm sure. And your tester's an engineer too. You're just having, you know, it's not as the rock star, you know, writing the code. I've been a developer before. I've certainly been down there. I know what it's like. But when you want to really get into, when you do the business side, it takes on a little bit more serious tone. And you got to be a little bit more practical about the whole thing. And so you got to really identify the test cases. You know, you got the unit test. That test, that gives you some real-time code. That validates instantiations of what you coded up. That's healthy. But then there's the test cases that stem from the user stories and the bigger questions, like back to the functionality, security, all these cross-cutting concerns that you need to worry about. And these need to be started capturing the test cases. And then how do you know you're even done with the continuous delivery cycle unless you have some way to know that test case has passed and been validated? You know, it'd be crazy. So you got to be able to have a good scorecard. You got to be able to understand that. And then, so how do you start organizing and bringing all this together? That's what the Microsoft Test Manager does. It works with the TFS repository. And what it does, it queries the TFS, and it gets the test cases and organizes them. And this thing right here, see this little test plan? That should be your tester's number one friend. That is what it does. Look at it. It's going to tie together builds. Okay, so you got different test plans. It ties together a build. It ties together test cases. It also ties together environments. Think about that. And those environments could be all virtual. And this whole thing is an electronic, you know, it lives, it's an electronic thing. It's no longer paper. If you're doing paper, it's time to move on. It's time to wean off of it. In fact, as time is going, I've had discussions where we're starting to look at the test plan that we consider the test plan one day. This is starting to become a legal document. You can imagine, you know, whatever, you know, especially in biology, especially healthcare, when I was dealing with some medical equipment, if they could have some way to automatically resurrect that test environment with the test cases, with the code, and hit a button and know that they had the same instance that they shipped, or they could cycle it over and over again. Is that good? Do you guys want that? I mean, do you need this help? Yes. Okay, thumbs up. And then you want to do this, and the trouble is that since you're doing more than one cycle or more than one iteration, you might have a dozen test plans when you start going in there. And they could be per iteration. You can organize them any way you want. So this is a powerful, powerful combination because you can actually start shrink wrapping and hydrating and dehydrating, whatever terminology you use, this whole environment. So before, I've actually had, you know, when you had to build out the environment, I've actually spent 3 months rebuilding environments that we had to put down. So we got our lab environment. So let's go through this a little bit. Let's start drilling down into the lab environments. This was if you go down and take a look, I have some code that you can set up and play around with TFS and the whole ALM. But in this one, we got a web client, web server, and data server. You could have maybe up to 20, 30 machines in your environment. But in that, what you need these test agents. Remember, we had a test controller, and I didn't really get into that. But the test controller works directly with TFS, which is a team project collection. And you're going to put an agent on each one of these. So when you instantiate these things, they have an agent on each one of these boxes, which work back to the test controller. And this is how some of the magic happens in terms of deploying, running those tests, and pulling the data back and forming those reports. There's a lot of moving parts in here. I remember I had to include some of the cartoons in here. And this, I like this one because I lived in that top environment. How many people have lived with all the boxes? Remember Ghost? And you had to repave it and rebuild out the environment. And I remember when e-commerce started, we were doing this and we had, 50 boxes. And every time we had another deploy, we had, and they were up all night redoing this. And I love the bottom one. See, Bob, there's only one way to reliable. You hide the computers under your desk. And that was your test system, wasn't it? You know, because now it's your box, and you don't have to go to Fred, who's going to repave it at a moment's notice. And I remember hiding my boxes. And we got to wean off of that. So I got one more cartoon at this one. So now, when you start dealing with virtual VMs, it's a commodity. If you aren't dealing with VMs, you have to have a specific reason. I can think of some testing, performance, or stress things. But they're more, truthfully, I've been doing more and more testing with pure VMs and have been finding really no difference. But it's how you build it out. And when I have when I talk about VM, I have a host box, and it usually has 64 gigs of RAM on it with several terabytes. Big boxes. But on the other hand, I can support maybe 20 VMs. And then I have maybe 10 of those when I start playing around with some environments. So you can get pretty esoteric in terms of what combinations. You can put isolated networks. You can do a lot of very combinations on that. But so it's a commodity. You have to think about that. When you can whip a VM up doing Win8 or Linux or whatever, it doesn't matter. This is what Azure does, and this is what they have really, really nailed. And so you have to be thinking, it's not just making VMs in the cloud. You're going to be making VMs on your desktop or in your whatever your lab you have doing. So let's get in terms of the relationship of some of these moving parts in the ALM. So in here, we get the happy VM we created. And that's SCVMM. And then you have your Hyper-V. How many people normally use Hyper-V Manager, right? Okay, and some of you are familiar with SCVMM. SCVMM is Hyper-V Manager on steroids. Yeah, I can give. Let's see how my time goes. I was thinking I could jump in and actually show you some of this stuff, but we can come on back. But what this really does is that it allows you to create a VM, configure it anyway. How much RAM? How many CPUs do you need on it? How do you want a network isolation or whatever? And this, I can whip out a VM in probably 10 minutes. And so, you know, if I want to build 20 VMs in a day, that's an hour. You know, big deal. Do you need a server? Do you need a client? You know, what do you want it for? It's just a commodity. And then you can make templates out of them. That means I can preload a bunch of the stuff I want, and then I use my templates to instantiate any type of VM I want. That is so powerful that you know, when you start hooking this all together, you are in a whole different world here. And the VMs sit back up on the host, and they live down there. And you have the MTM, the lab center. And the MTM has two parts to it, the lab manager, and there's a test center on it. And we're going to go into that a little bit. But the MTM is the one that really pulls the stuff together. So I'm almost scared to try this after my first failure with PowerPoint, but let's be gutsy. So what I want to do, let's slide on over here. This is MTM. Okay, and there's two parts to MTM. There's test center and lab center. We're going to talk the lab center first. So the lab center deals with virtual environments. Its whole purpose now is connected to the SCVMM, which really is where you create your VMs and does that. But now you got to take all these different VMs and pull them together to create an environment that you want to work with. And here, this is one of my projects that just ended. We did Hilo JavaScript, and I had different environments. But we're just going to talk around some of this. So you have test settings, you got your library, and you have your test controller. So this stuff all starts hooking up together. But let's say you want to do a new, and let's just get... So take a look at this. When I want to set up a new environment, I can say... Now, you might want to do a standard, which is your classical box. I got five or six boxes I always use. And then all you want to use are from the SCVMM. And then you start selecting the machines, and then you start saying what properties. Oops. Oh, this is... Oh, G1006. Okay. That's because I was moving boxes around myself. And so disconnected on there. So this is what happens. Somebody's on the taking up my bandwidth here, so I lost my connection. But when you sit down here and set up an environment, you can go through this. I'm just wanting to get you oriented to all this. I mean, I could probably, if you want to sit with me afterwards, I'd be more than happy to drill down deeper on this stuff. But with time permit, just getting you understanding that the lab center here is to work with your environments, to set up your environments. And when you have your environments defined and understood, you probably want to go over to, you know, say, this is cool. You know, your library here, your test settings over here. See if we can get in here. Okay, these are some of my environments, so I'm going to start sending data diagnostics. Oh, there's a lot of diagnostics, or you can start hooking a lot of third parties into these environments, too, for tooling and other type of analysis. But the other side is a test center. And what you're looking at here is actually what I use it, you know, I don't just try to talk about this stuff. I try to use this on my project. As a test lead for PMP, you know, dog food, use it. Find out reality. And I learned a lot of stuff on this. But in here is that we're looking at a test plan for Hilo.js. These are different tests and these are all queries. Everything lives in TFS. This actually queries back to TFS, and then I start organizing my tests. You know, here I got a crop test case, detailed, hub, internal Microsoft testing tools, because I had some quality gates that Microsoft wanted me to run. And one of the cool things here is, how many people are trying to build Windows 8 apps? I want more than that. But, you know, so you have all these, and one of the big things is when you start dealing with all these quality gates, you know, the quality gates are published in MSDN. What I did here is I walked through and I brought all the quality gates at test cases. You know, there's no reason why we can't start thinking about shipping test cases and getting you up and going. You know, just it took me, you know, a couple of weeks to make sure I had all the right tests. But wouldn't it be nice for you guys to say, I just downloaded this stuff and now I got all these quality gates and I already got the specific tests I need to run for Windows 8? You know, lower the pain. You know, continuous delivery. And what happens if what happens inside your own organizations that you can start defining your reusable test cases and, you know, someone else is building a product and they still have to go through the same quality gates. This is starting to leverage your work with other teams. And these are all queries when you get into it. But what's interesting, and let's look behind the scenes really with the test plan. So let's see, be the properties. So here's a test plan. This is looking inside of it a little bit more. So what we have, of course, you have to put a name, the description. Of course, I didn't put a description because I've been really the only one looking at this, you know, introducing it. This is active. But then you get interesting because this is where you start getting the continuous delivery. This is how the tools start integrating. Remember I said a long time ago, you want to, you know, to get achieve this, you want to do build, deploy, and test over and over again? Well, you got to know what, you got to have environment. So the test plan is wiring all this together so that when you're in Visual Studio and you're in build, you can start doing continuous, you know, continuous deployment and continuous testing and finally continuous delivery so that you know where you're at and what's going on. But you know what? Not everything's going to be automated. That'd be great, but you know the reality is that you might have manual testing. You might have automated testing. And each one of these might have their own test settings, your own test environment. Remember, you can assign different environments for different tests. And then you probably start dealing with what builds and what configuration. Because configuration is one of the hardest things that you got to always keep track of. So you can make dozens of different test plans and configure them different ways for different purposes. So this is one. So remember when I mentioned about paper test plans? This is a new electronic form that we're working with. You know, and feedback, you know, I realize there are some issues, but I'll tell you this much. Compared to where we were, this is utterly fantastic. And this is one of the things that a lot of people don't see. Into, you know, when I went to the first looked at the Microsoft Test Manager, I had to wrap my brain around it and understand that this was really one of the they solved one of the a big issue, and it's going to get more and more. When you start having an electronic test plan, and you can imagine a regulator going, I want your electronic test plan, and that wraps up your environment, that wraps all your test cases, and so it starts becoming more and more of your standard right there. And the nice thing is that you can start sharing this stuff around. Very, very nice. But it's not obvious. Unless, and again, back to when I said, why set up the whole ALM system? You know, what's this Microsoft Test Manager? This is one of those things that people, it wasn't obvious to, you know, how this worked together and why it's so important and what you can really do with it and what is it going to do for you. Of course, when you run your tests, you want to know what happened, what's the results. We ship the product. This used to be all red. But on here, you can see it's just one big summary. So, you know, when we run the test, I had half of these in manual tests, half of these in automated tests. And there's, you know, there's times where I like to automate a lot of my tests. I mean, who wouldn't? But and then this is the end-up result. The couple blue ones were dealing with an accessibility tool that had an issue. And so I just punted on that one. But it does give you a good feedback of where you are and how it all works together. So let's go back in here. Of course, now it's not working again. So we'll close it off. I think that's what they did before. And You know, I have done so many different presentations that after a while, you got to learn how to sing and dance. My brother's a professional clown, and so that has warped me forever. I don't know what they, you know, I'm not a big fan of clowns. So, it's still not freaking working. So, Chris, what did you do to the system?
I restarted it. Not the system, just the slide deck.
Yeah, well.
I just launched PowerPoint and then go to the slide, and I did.
What?
Go to the slides you want to go to. Like which one you were on.
Yeah. Well, let's just go to that one.
And go to this tab here.
And just hit the slide.
And say from current slide. Sure. And then it worked for me after that.
So I don't know. I don't think I'm going to jump off into the. Let's see. Da 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 da. So let's go in here. So the test plan itself. You know, I talked about the MTM, and one of the big things about the MTM is how does it work with TFS? That was a big learning thing, is that the MTM uses TFS as a repository. And this is, you know, we saw that one thing in configuration, but this slide here is a rethink. We got test suites. You know, we saw all those test cases. Those were under there. But you can organize them as test suites and have test cases, and you can go down several levels if you want to do that. You got your auto test settings, and you got your manual test settings. And then you got your requirements. Now, this gets very interesting here. Your requirements, your work items here, your test cases, and your bugs, and your build. So this starts all integrating this together. And this is the relationship that's really behind the scenes. Okay? This is, now, the power of pulling all this stuff together and having a one-stop shopping type of deal changes how you're going to be doing your testing. And you need this interrelationship if you're going to do continuous delivery and get a good reporting system going up on there. So, the test case. How many people actually write test cases? I mean, up in TFS. I don't see too many hands. Well, you know, the big question is why, you know, when you go into the test case. But when you go inside there and take a look on some of the test cases, you're going to find out there's ways to, a test case, by the way, can be a unit test. When you put that the test method on there, that can be linked back to a test case. So you can, you know, all those unit tests actually get sucked right into this as working test cases. So that's cool. Another one is, then you got the manual ones. But usually you start off with the manual and then you start automating them. But you want to link them back to the user story. Again, you want to have those relationships defined so you understand when I ship it, what user stories have been done and validated, and what hasn't been done and validated inside the system. So this is one of the things that we start talking about linking on here. So we got to link the test cases. And up on here, we are dealing with, we're over here in, you're familiar with Visual Studio. We got projects. You got coded UI. I'm going to create it. In the end, it's a work item. And you connect it back to a work item, and you got a test case. So all these tools are inside of there. This is to tell you how those tools, and they do interact. And I know a lot of people, developers or other people, just, you know, this overhead. Well, sometimes sometimes when you do spiking, everybody here probably, you know, you're familiar with spiking? You know, I'm going to do a test spike, or I'm going to go out and just code something. It's not going to be in the brain branch. Okay. So you're over there, you spike it, and that's where you get to be cowboy, and you get to generate any code you want and just make sure. But when you start bringing it in, you want to start bringing your unit test and start validating it and start integrating to the main branch inside the whole thing. And this is how you do it. And this is for you can do it for a test method, coded UI, manual test. And the next thing is tracking your test plan results. And give me my servers, I'll just go to the picture here. And so when you run your test, you can run it, you hit the, when you go back to, you just hit run, and you get, and you, either a manual test comes up, and you go through and you pass each operation, or you hit automated, and you run the automated test. So you can have a mixture of manual, you can have a mixture of that. And what's the nice thing is let's say your test team is distributed. This is great because the only thing they really care about is really playing around with the test plan. And so you can isolate it and you can say, you know, over here I just need you to run through this test plan, and they have everything there for them. They don't even have to start getting into the big source control. They're focused on just getting those tests up and running. So it's much easier to start pairing out and distributing how you want to organize who's going to do which testing. You know, because if you got some young people and they're just beginning out on that, they're going to probably do a lot more manual testing on that. But you want to know, but again, you want to know how the tests are going. What was passed, what was failed. And inside of this, you can also start putting comments. And one of the biggest issues, you know, when they go in there is reproducibility. And when you do work with the Microsoft Test Manager or run the manual tests or even the automated tests, you can capture all that so that the whole environment is stored. Yeah, okay, now you're paying in disk space, but the cool part is you can reproduce, and so the dev can come on down and they see it, same environment. In fact, you can shrink wrap the whole thing in, and the tester, the developer can pull up the whole environment on his desk and run through the same identical environment and say, oh, okay, I understand. I had something configured this way and I assumed this. And this is again taking just a look at the test results of an operation. And so at the end of the day, you can get a clear idea what has happened. Especially if you, like me, I might ship it over to India, I might ship it over to China, I might ship it over to the Midwest. I don't know sometimes where my test team is going to be. But I do know that once I have it up, I can wrap it up now. And this is far, far more powerful in terms of me handing out and getting my teams working together and coordinating. And knowing that the results are really fast. Because again, it's again continuous delivery. You got it. You got a cycle that you want to work with. So I like the bottom part here. You know, engineering repro. I remember doing this on some biomedical stuff, and they were so scared about having to go back and redo some of those tests. I mean, an engineering change request? Crap. You know, we got to redo all the tests. We got to reset up that environment. And yeah, it probably indicates that maybe a little bit more screaming in the team. You know, I think they're being a little subtle on here. So what we do is we do try to capture the story. You know, so this is, you know, when we started out, manual testing was easy. And in fact, I still remember, you know, like I said at the beginning, when I first came here, one of the testers came into the meeting room and he whipped out a spreadsheet of 3,000 manual tests. And that was the regression. Are you kidding me? You know, who in the heck wants to run 3,000? That's how come I became, you know, I write code. I'm not going to go back and, you know, rerun 3,000 tests. You got to be crazy, be cheaper, you know. So this is where you got to, you know, manual, there is time for manual. And sometimes, it's a cost issue. But when you want to start doing continuous delivery, you got to be honest with yourself. And this is where your developers have to step up and be coders. And really take the effect of how I'm going to write the code, because as those test cases increase, and they're going to increase because the systems are getting far, far more complex, you're going to have to go automation. I don't have to probably argue with this crowd that automation's a way to go. I figure I don't see anybody here who wouldn't want to automate anything. So the question comes down to, so as let's go to the next level. Okay, we got our tests, we got our MTM, we got our test plan, we got our environment. Well, how do we build this thing together? I mean, okay, you know, you right now, when you go Visual Studio and you bring that up, you build it, right? You guys, you know about the little build, you say, I'm going to build it, and it's a default environment. Well, there's another thing, so instead of selecting build, you know, that's what you normally see right here. And now we're in some of your, now we're in your unit test, and that's your continuous integration, that's nice. Ah, but if you want to go to the build deploy test, and I want to take a second, how many people are familiar with that concept in Visual Studio, build, deploy, and test? I see only a couple hands here. Okay, so, and I'm not surprised, because if you're not really familiar with Microsoft Test Manager and the test plan, there's another template. And this is the lab template. And you bring up the lab template, and all of a sudden, that's going to suck in the test plan. That's going to suck up in the environment, the deploy, and the test settings. And so that whole purpose of the lab thing is it says, what's your test plan? What's your environment? Okay, and what test do you want to run? It's just a different menu that comes up. And you add all that. In fact, it will go use the other simple build and build it. And all this does here is it manages the whole build, deploy, and test. Now, there's some learnings here. I had the biggest learning I have here is the deployment. Okay, you build the code, you run your unit test, that's fine. But when you do deployment, a WCF app deploys differently than a WPF app, which deploys different than your web application. And then you got Windows 8 Store app. Each one is a different MSI type of deal and a different deployment and has different requirements. So that is a tough thing to go into, is that it's not just building your code, it's building your deployment MSI too. And you want to really test that. You want to test your MSI, you want to make sure it deploys correctly, and you want to make sure it uninstalls correctly. This is where you do it. And that was a big lesson, because when I looked in there, it was one little text field, and I realized inside of there it just says deployment, and you end up PowerShell is your friend here, but it's again understanding creating those MSI. Now the simplest way sometimes is just create them by hand. There are ways to create them by automation, but I think that needs a little bit more work, because I found that I had more than one time it was far simpler for me to create my my deployment by hand. But that seems kind of crazy, because you want to get that loop again and get going. So I mentioned build, deploy, test. This is what it looks like when I run it. It goes over there. You got your code checked in. You got your build server. And that runs it, that's the default, and then you get the lab build. And that's really just it running your test plan. Wow, think about it. Your test plan is no longer a piece of paper, it is now a piece of code that instructs which environment, and it does all this background. So the test plan now is a living piece of code that is running itself. Cool. I think it's cool. And you guys should too. I got a laser here. So on the lab host, so what you hear, this is back to the virtual environments, the test agents here, you know, so you got your old classical S copy here, it's that you're just copying it off to the different machines. And I've gone down to where I've deployed out to two or three different servers. I deployed a WCF, I deployed a web app, and then I had a couple clients, and I put apps on there that cocked back to there. So that is very well thought out, and it works very nicely. But this is the whole thing. It's you first build, you deploy, you test. I don't come up with the acronyms or the naming, but it works. You know, after you go a while through the cycle, the naming does work. So you want to build, you want to deploy, and you want to test. So when I say continuous delivery, and this is really starts getting to the heart of it. The other part was the test plan. You need the test plan first. You need your environments. And then you have to come back to Visual Studio, set up your build, and hook it all together. A lot of moving parts, but now you're automating. Remember at the beginning when I said that the traditional way, if you can consider this, we had machines for each one of this, and you threw the code across the wall and say, I think it's ready to be deployed. And they would go off away, and you didn't know what was going on. It'd just tell you there's a bug. But now with this type of environment, the developers, if there's a bug that occurs, we can take a snapshot and hand that back to you, and you can actually explore what the heck happened in that staging server. You know, it's not a secret place behind somebody's desk anymore. It's very accessible, and it allows you to go in there as a developer or as a team to go back and review what the heck happened, what broke down. Especially if you're going to start going up into the cloud in Azure, you might be scaling stuff up to 100 different systems. How are you going to do that? You got to build those environments. You don't want to start going out there, you know, to Azure and start costing money. You want to make sure your code is working at the beginning before you really get out to the production level. You know, the higher quality and the more seamless you make this rhythm, the pain goes down and your cost effectiveness goes way up. So one thing I want to mention, there's tools. Well, I know that people tell me I had too many slides, but I have to tell you, it's just not manual testing. There's a cool thing. These are things that you need to go take a look at. The book that we're going to hand out today goes into every one of these. Exploration testing is very hot, very cool. You can go in there with exploration testing, grab an app, and start running through it that way, and you can record it all. Not just record it, you can say, I want to start automating this whole exploration because it was a very good scenario. And I think I need to automate this scenario. So the tools are starting to get to the point where you can go from manual to automation. You know, because you already went through all that process. Why not capture all that? Unit testing, automated testing, performance, stress, load testing. IntelliTrace. IntelliTrace is really good. You know, going there. Now you got the stakeholder feedback tool. These are cool because then you got, this is where you want to have your customer go play it. Go run the tool, and now they can run it, and they can make comments on the screen saying, I don't understand what's going on here, but it's a feedback mechanism where they're actually running the code in a test environment that they have control. And if they saw something, again, you can go back and take a look what happened, and you can get direct feedback to the customer back, you know, before you ship it out. And then you got remote debugging, which is always useful. And anybody who's done a lot of tests on that. So let's go with, the life cycle. This is important. You know, we talk about Agile. You know, when I first came in here and I worked with Peter Provost. Anybody know who Peter Provost is? He's very Agile type of guy, and other people very, you know, when they got me into Agile, I said, well, this is cool. And then Peter says, oh, yes, the tester has to be really at the meeting. And, you know, when people think of Agile, they're right here in the development iteration. But let's be honest, there is some, you know, there is a little bit of waterfall still a little bit in here. You still got to set up your infrastructure. Now, one of the questions, I've been trying to go around talking to people about their ALM, and the scary thing that, you know, some of the people said, they raised their hand to me is, they see that picture and they say, God, do I have to interact, you know, build that all out the first time? No. I mean, I do it piecemeal, do it over iterative, understand what you're doing, you know, because you still got to ship your code, you got a timeline, but as you understand more and more what your tools can do, as you get further along in the cycle, start pulling them in. You know, jumping out to the deep end. Well, it's fun sometimes, you know. You gotta maintain your business, and you're changing workflows. You're maturing your workflows, and you gotta be honest about that because this is non-trivial. You are changing how you're doing stuff. I'm not gonna say it's, you know, straightforward, because you are doing things a little bit different. You're now tying. There's a responsibility of tying those test cases. Oh gosh, yes, I gotta tie my test cases back to the user story. So, but it's far better than doing it in paper. Man, if anybody complains to me, I'll make them do it in paper. And then, yeah. And when they start crying, then I'll give them the test plan back. So the inception is really setting up your environment, your tools, and understanding that. You got your development, you got to ship it, and then you got the next project. But this is your cycle. And you're going to go over and over again. But the nice thing is your ALM thing matures, you're going to be able to start reusing your test cases. You're going to be able to start reusing it so the pain goes down with each cycle as you go through your projects on that. But this is the way things are moving and are heading. And I like this one. So let's start talking about, you know, this is 10 plus weeks within sprints. We kind of touched this a little bit. You know, we got acceptance testing, we got end-to-end, we just got performance. So your test plans can be whatever your quality gates. They can be all over the place. It's just as a way to organize that testing focus. And, but now, you know, this is all great, but you got to talk to the managers, right? They want to know what the heck you've been doing. And managers don't want to hear blah, 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 blah. What they want to hear is, give me a picture. I need to have the report real fast. And this is what you get when you start tying everything together. You can get a snapshot real fast of what is going on. This is a test plan progress report straight from the from one of our projects. And you can see, you know, what was passed, what's failed. So as time goes on, things got up, and then finally things passed and passed, and then we were all done. But it gives a way that you can communicate more effectively with people where you are in your life cycle. Oops. I don't want to jump ahead to my favorite cartoon. Okay. User story test status. So here, this is another way to look at the reports. You know, where do we stand and how many hours are we in there? And it's interesting. So, you know, I like the hours remaining, but I'll be honest with you. I have found that if I'm with a tight, good team and we all know each other, we get a little bit sloppy on those hours. But that's because we know each other and we know how the ball goes in there. But what we really care about is that story, are those stories covered? And how, you know, and how many tests, and here's a big one, you know, how many tests and how many bugs? So that's our favorite picture right here. What's the story? Yeah, well, I know the people, so these things sometimes get, you know, but if I don't know the test team and they're distributed, this becomes far, far more important. And how many hours did you put in there? How many hours do you think before you're done? But this becomes more critical. What are my results? How many bugs? I want to know. And if I'm going to write a check, and I ran a company once, and I'll tell you, this becomes more important when you start writing checks for 10 engineers. You start finding out what the hell is going on today and what's going on, and you want a fast summary. So this is what you don't want to happen. You know, when I was back at Edwards Air Force Base, we literally flew the B-1 bomber around Edwards. We were down on the ground and we're uploading real-time code. And there's a test pilot in there, and there's two testers sitting next to the pilot. And so, oh, we had a null pointer. And the pilot says, I could take over. Holy crap, you know, think about that. You know, you don't want to be in a 777, you don't want to be in a plane to see this. But I'm on the ground going and listening to the chatter going back and forth as, you know, and so that was why the pilot had sitting there. But they saw that, you know, the object, we didn't have, it was a null pointer going inside the code in real time. And that you know, that gives you a little bit, I tell you, when you're sitting in those type of seats, but, you know, on the other hand, you know who's sitting in those seats now? When you start getting out to Azure and you start getting into the 24/7 and the SLA, your service licensing agreement, that's your mom, and she's going to complain to you. How many of your moms go, the code's not working, this app's not working, can you come and fix it? Why isn't it working? Mom, get off of XP, please. You know, I bought you that Windows 7 computer yet last week. Okay. But this is one that we've all experienced. Okay. So I want to end back on this. In summary, why is this all important? We have the service and license agreement is now a critical part of your business model. You aren't going to be putting those machines under your desk anymore. You got to grow up. I mean, and I'll tell you this much. When you get out there with the international world, you know, everybody on the planet is developing code. And they're going to be shipping it. And when you come up with a good idea, people are watching. And they're going to watch the quality of the thing. You don't want your customers finding your bugs. And let's say you're doing a financial thing or something else. It's all interconnected. So you got to have a way. And this is how come the ALM has to go up to the next level. I always say, you know, you're going to be level A or you're going to be level B. The people who are level A are going to be around a lot longer going in here. Okay, folks, for more information, when you leave and take your break today, we have the book out there, Testing for Continuous Delivery with Visual Studio. I got some code out there. You can go up on CodePlex. MSDN has been doing a great job. And the ALM Rangers has some really good references, too, that I would recommend you take a look at all three. And I want to thank, you know, Alan Wills and whoever couldn't make it. He's over in Cambridge. But Howie over here, thanks. You know, they were the writers. I just primarily was the tester, and they actually bolted me down and pulled this out of my brain to produce a fantastic book. But the book will tell you many things. It will go through everything, and it will drill down a lot deeper, and it will show you how to use those tools. And you can go to CodePlex, grab the code, and you can use that and build it out. And most of the stuff can be built out with stuff that you can just download and get familiar with. So, thanks. If you have any questions, that'd be great. I get a couple of applause. Thanks.